ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, text number 15. Yad uktam pati dristena girishena prasidata tadyayanto japantascha Pujayantascha samyata Yaruktam pati dristena Girishena prasidata Tadyayanto japantascha Pujayantascha samyata Yaruktam pati dristena Girishena prasidata Tadyayanto japantascha Pujayantascha samyata Word for word translation Yad, that Uktam, said Pati, on the way. Dristena, while meeting. Girishena, by Lord Shiva. Prasidata, being very much satisfied. Tat, that. Jayantaha, meditating. Japantaha, Japantacha, chanting also. Pujayantacha, worshipping also. Samyataha, with great control. Purport and translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. When all the sons of Prachinabari left home to execute austerities, they met Lord Shiva, who out of great mercy instructed them about the absolute truth. All the sons of Prachinabari meditated upon the instructions, chanting and worshipping with great care and attention. Purport. It is clear that to perform austerities or penances, or for that matter any form of devotional service, one has to be guided by a spiritual master. Here it is clearly stated that the 10 sons of Maharaj Prachinabari were favored by the appearance of Lord Shiva, who out of great kindness gave them instructions regarding the execution of austerities. Lord Shiva actually became the spiritual master of the 10 sons, and in turn his disciples took his words so seriously that simply by meditating upon his instructions, Jayantaha, they became perfect. This is the secret of success. After being initiated and receiving the orders of the spiritual master, the disciple should unhesitatingly think about the instructions or orders of the spiritual master and should not allow himself to be disturbed by anything else. This is also the verdict of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who, while explaining a verse of Bhagavad Gita, Yavasyatmika Buddhi Ekehe Kurunandana, Bhagavad Gita 2:41, points out that the order of the spiritual master is the life substance of the disciple. The disciple should not consider whether he is going back home, back to Godhead. His first business should be to execute the order of the spiritual master. Thus, a disciple should always meditate on the order of the spiritual master, and that is the perfectional meditation. Not only should he meditate upon that order, but he should find out the means by which he can perfectly worship and execute it. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshunamunitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swam Vipakadam Yam Dadati Swaparantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langaite Girim Yakripaha Tamaham Vande Shri Gurun Dinatari Nam Pancha Kapa through this Chapra Sindhubi Eva Chapadi Dinam Pavani Bhu Vaishnavi Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So the title of the chapter is Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva. So this is following the departure of Maharaj Prithu, who had now left his sons in charge of the order or affairs of the world, and his eldest son, who was named Vichitasva, along with his other brothers, ruled over the planet. So, as we understand, Maharaj Prithu is coming in line in the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, who was a great devotee of the Lord. And so there is the amazing potency that he had as being a devotee, which was we see in Maharaj Prithu, his sons, and now Prachinabari and his sons, the Prachetas. So King Prachinabari or Prachinabari was a Prajapati just like Lord Brahma, Daksha, and they were instructed by Maharaj Bahusad was instructed by Lord Brahma actually to produce good population. So he married Shatadruti, who was the daughter of the ocean, and with that wife these 10 sons have appeared. And of course, according to the Vedic system, we've heard all the lectures throughout the week how in the Vedic system, the father, the spiritual master, and the king, their word were seen, they were seen as the representatives of the Lord. So if they spoke something, they were their words and the instructions were accepted as such. So this pastime, just to note, this is happening in Satya Yuga. So it is very normal in Satya Yuga that persons behaved this way. Like in Kali Yuga, it might be a little bit different. First of all, our fathers might not instruct us properly. We might not have qualified fathers. The kings, presidents, or prime ministers, whatever it may be, they're not even well-versed what to speak of acting according to any kind of religious value or principle. So it is very difficult right now to ascertain how when a father or a king would speak, their words were taken so seriously and they were seen as the representatives of the Lord. So it is not surprising that these 10 sons, as soon as their father told them, there's a bigger picture here. I received this instruction from Lord Brahma. In order to produce good population, I instruct you to go and perform austerities and sacrifices and then come back and continue producing good population. So later on, Prabhupada explains how the sons were so surrendered that they took this instruction to heart and immediately they left. They traveled west, and that is where they will meet Lord Shiva. So these, in Satya Yuga, where people lived for 100,000 years, there were many virtuous qualities that existed. Not only were they surrendered, it was very easy for them to accept the Vedic conclusions because their environment supported that type of lifestyle and philosophy. The kings took care of them materially and spiritually. So the Prachetas were instructed by their father, and we will see that they too also will carry out penances and sacrifices and get further instructions from another guru of theirs, Lord Shiva, on how to always be engaged in devotional service to the Lord. So in this world, Everybody is working for something. Everyone is performing some kind of sacrifice. And in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a section where in the fifth chapter, following a discussion Arjuna is having with Krishna, Krishna has spoken spoken about different sacrifices, working in remembrance of him, etc. So Arjuna asks him at the beginning of the fifth chapter that you have spoken so many things, you have given me so many instructions. Arjuna said, "Oh Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial?" So if you go through Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks the yoga ladder. He explains fruit of activities, he's explaining karma yoga, buddhi yoga, bhakti. And he's explaining to Arjuna, and eventually at the end he says to Arjuna, "Now I've explained everything, you can decide." And in the middle here we're getting a glimpse of that indecisiveness in Arjuna, his intelligence trying to kick in. "Now you tell me of the two which is more superior." So although we might think, oh well, Arjuna was already a devotee of Krishna, and he's asking obvious questions. Well, these are questions that we ourselves might be asking. Well, we can perform sacrifices and have a good life and become elevated souls in the next life. We'll continue with our Krishna consciousness. We'll be respectful to the devatas, perform this yajna before I die, or we'll go and bathe in the Ganges. We don't have to do all this work. But out of the two works, Krishna explains that devotional service is much more supreme, because him being the benefactor of all sacrifices and religious activities and the controller and the provider for all types of living entities, all results should come to him. So we're working so hard, we're performing sacrifice, we're performing yajna in this Kali Yuga. The best yajna, of course, is to engage in the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. That is our means of perfection in this life. So the sacrifice is necessary. We all have to perform some work. So later on, as they keep talking, Krishna says, "Bhaktaram yajya tapasam savaloka maheshwaram suhidam savabhutanam gyanmam shantim rishyati." The sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So although we have higher planetary systems, we have Brahmaloka, we even have Shivaloka, still in these places, our life is not eternal. We have to break through and try to go to the Vishnu planets of Vaikuntha Lokas, where life is eternal, where we'll be situated in our permanent Krishna conscious position. So Krishna explains that, yes, instead of working separately and independently of me, because I'm the benefactor, I'm the well-wisher of all sacrifices, place your activities unto me and I will deliver you from the pangs of material existence. So Krishna's guiding Arjuna that devotional service unto him is the most supreme form of sacrifice, and not that sacrifice that is independent of him. So even in the different shastras, we read that this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, this sacrifice, it is there in all yugas, but in different yugas there are different means of attaining perfection based on the circumstances. So Satya Yuga, people live for 100,000 years and their form of perfection is meditation. In Treta Yuga, they're living for 10,000 years. But for I cannot comprehend living for 10,000 years. And persons performed great sacrifices because the environment allowed such things to happen. Even if we read back, we'll hear how King Bahishad, he was notorious for performing constant yagyas. He would perform one yagya today, in the evening he's performing another one, the next day he's performing another one, and on, he was notorious for that. And because they had the resources, I'm not talking about little yagyas they'd perform, they would give in charity, there'd be mountains of ghee, of grains, of yogurt, of milk, of cows, of gold in sacrifice. We do not have that luxury in Kali Yuga. All these things are not there. So according to the yuga, applicable or appropriate means of perfection were given by the Supreme Lord. So the age that came before us in the Dwapara Yuga, persons lived for 1,000 years and they performed worship to the Lord. So deity worship was the main thing. Now, even nowadays, we were told that Kali Yuga people live for 100 years. That's very hard. My father didn't even live till 60. I have friends who didn't make it past 30. And by the time I had met my Diksha Guru, he explained that in the country that I was born in, life expectancy was 30 because of a known disease epidemic, AIDS. There we go. So I'm 35, so I've lived. So if we think in the bigger scheme of things, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, if used unwisely, is a waste. 20 years, if used in the service of the Lord, is a great success. So it is all relative to how we live our lives. A fly lives one day, but that one day for that fly is relative to its life, its little life in terms of what they do. So we have 40 years, 50 years, 60 or 70 years, max 120. I have not heard anyone living longer than that. I have seen 105, 110, but other than that, we're pushing it. So we use the best circumstances to make spiritual advancement. And you will find that in the most diseased state, when we're most diseased, the remedy is extremely powerful. And that is how the holy name is explained to be the king of the Maha Mantra. It is the greatest mantra, particularly for this age, because it is so powerful that it even allows those who are coming from unclean circumstances to become brahminical by nature. So the holy name is very, very powerful, and that is our sacrifice in this age. We're cleansing ourselves and we're sharing Krishna with others. So not only do we chant for ourselves, but we perform Harinam Sankirtan so that people out there might also benefit by hearing the name of Krishna. Even if it's accidental, even if it's jokingly, we see on the Harinam sometimes people pass along and they do a little dance, or they try to mock those who are doing Harinam. Get a job, Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari. Well, they've said the name. Right? Even if they don't have the understanding, the holy name is powerful enough. It might not allow them to make drastic progress in this life, but it will continue. Not only will they chant Hare Krishna now, but they will come across it later on in a different life, in another life. So the holy name for us is all powerful, and that is our sacrifice. So if we read in the translation, the sons of Prachinabari left home to execute austerities. And before they actually got to the lake where they stood for 10,000 years, reciting the prayers that they were given by Lord Shiva, they came across this beautiful place that is going to be described later In terms of the scenery, the birds that were there, the flowers, the lotuses, the clear waters, etc., all that is being explained, and we see the emergence of Lord Shiva, who doesn't necessarily reveal himself to ordinary, not to ordinary, to human beings. While it is explained in different texts that when the devatas were here, it would seem as if they don't even touch the ground. Right, they would glide, they would levitate, right? They're explained to be ethereal beings. So Lord Shiva, out of his great mercy, showed himself to the Prachetas because he could understand who they were and what their responsibility was. So sometimes we receive the great favor. We receive blessings of the Lord because of who we associate ourselves with. So these Prachetas, they are the sons of the emperor, who is the son of another great king, who is the son and descendants all the way going back to Dhruva Maharaj. And later on we see that because he's coming in that lineage, affectionately Lord Shiva chooses to show them mercy by speaking the absolute truth, by instructing them on how to actually approach the Supreme Lord whilst they go about their austerities. And later on, we will also hear that though their father was engaged in fruitive yagyas and fruitive sacrifices, another great devotee of the Lord intervened to instruct him further on the absolute truth, and that was Narada Muni. And Narada Muni in the same breath could recognize that this is one of the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. And we remember that Dhruva Maharaj, although initially he went to the forest for material gain, he wanted a planet that was greater than Lord Brahma's, after having darshan, or after receiving instructions from Narada Muni and having darshan of his Lord, the desires transformed and he became a great devotee. So because Narada Muni could recognize this is a descendant of a very dear devotee of the Lord, I am going to show special mercy and favor towards this king and also instruct them on the absolute truth. So based on our association, we get the mercy of the Lord. Based on our connection with those that are dear to Krishna, we get the blessings. So Lord Shiva recognized who these 10 personalities were, and he instructed them on the absolute truth. Now he was able to do that because the Prachetas also presented themselves as students. They presented themselves as disciples, and they accepted the instruction given by Lord Shiva. So in the purport, it speaks about how one in any form of devotional service, whether it's in just our hearing, chanting phase, or in worshipping the deities, or in our aspect of surrender, that at any stage of our devotional service, one has to be guided by a spiritual master. And we're never really, we don't ever try to think we have it all figured out. Even in our advanced, or we've been chanting for 40 years, still we take shelter of the spiritual master's instructions. And even if the spiritual master who used to instruct us has passed on, we still have these books. Srila Prabhupada is still instructing us on how to attain that perfection, on how to perform devotional service. So being guided by the spiritual master comes through instructions. It comes through hearing, and it comes through actively executing the instructions, not just meditating on them. And that was the last line of the purport, that not only should the disciple meditate on that order, but he or she should find out the means by which they can perfectly worship and execute the order. So it's a lifelong plan of execution. Even if we look at the life of Srila Prabhupada, he went through, you know, he was a working man, a family man, but he never for once forgot the instruction of his spiritual master. And that's why when he did get that opportunity to finally carry it out 100%, that instruction was still fresh in his mind. So, as I mentioned, the 10 sons of Maharaj Pachinabari were favored by the appearance of Lord Shiva, who out of great kindness gave them instructions on the execution of austerities. So, in a proper human civilization, we see there's order in society. So whether we call it vanashram or different cultures might call it different things, there's an order, and it is that order that allows people to grow materially and spiritually. Even if one is classified as a Shudra or if you're a Vaishya, whatever it might be, not only is the king responsible for your material welfare, but also your spiritual advancement. So resources or the environment is very favorable for one's being proactive in hearing about the absolute truth. So the Prachetas have receive the instruction of Lord Shiva, and they're going to go and perform austerities for 10,000 years. And as we read, when Krishna was speaking with Arjuna, Krishna explained that he's the king of all sacrifices and that the results should be offered to him because only he's the one who actually gives or who rewards the living entities, or who makes it even more possible for the living entities to attain that perfection as the super soul within the heart. Krishna gives the understanding and the intelligence by which one can approach him. So Lord Shiva is in charge of the Tamagun. And Lord Shiva is always surrounded by his associates, of course, and one of them being Durga, Parvati, Shaktya, Gauraya, as she's sometimes called. And by Lord Shiva's mercy, one is actually able to overcome this tamogun state or this ignorance and be able to enter into the realm of understanding who the source and who the well-wisher of all living beings is. So when we make stride or when we make an attempt to know the Lord, his representatives will kindly pave the way or show us the way. And they will give us the understanding by which we can come to him. And if we're open, if we have clarity, we will see the different ways the Lord tries to give us more understanding about our relationship towards him. And so he says, Tesham Satatam Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Puvakam Dadami Bodhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite. Krishna gives that direction. We might, in our idealistic state, we might think Krishna has to descend himself to instruct us, sometimes in a comical way, whether it's with Jesus or God. We'll see that people try to wait for God to descend in his form to instruct them about their life. So there's different stories, you know, there's a man drowning, oh God, please save me. Where are you? Why hast thou forsaken me? A helicopter comes, rescue helicopter, drop down the ladder, hold on, no, I'm waiting for God. We're here to save you, no, I'm waiting for God. God Almighty will come personally to save me. Helicopter goes off. Oh, God, help me. There's a water rescue patrol. We are here to save you. Jump on board. No. We're waiting for God. No. We are here. We have been sent. We saw the Coast Guard. You are stranded. We're here to save you. No. I'm waiting for God. They give up. They leave. Somebody else comes. Hop on. We're here to save you. About to drown. I'm waiting for God. you drown. Right? So if we're not open enough to see that God or Krishna sends different people to try to help us, then we will miss the boat. So we might say, oh, well, Lord Shiva, he's a bit of a weird character. You know, he has these eerie-looking personalities traveling with him. He's directly dealing with Tamagun. And then he has this wife, Parvati, who's very sharp, and she covers and she throws over the living entities, you know, and he's covered in ash, and he wears a skull of, you know, a garland of skulls, you know. How can we receive instructions from such a personality? You know, Lord Shiva, Vaishnavam Yatam Sambhu, he is a great Vaishnava of the Lord, and one of his main responsibilities is to protect the holy Dham. Like if you go to Vrindavan, there's different four different directions. Lord Shiva is protecting the holy Dham from miscreants who might come and bother the bhakti of others. Lord Shiva is in many pastimes of the Lord, even as a gopi, Gopeshwari. Lord Shiva is there. So Lord Shiva is looking out for the sincere living entities who are seeking out the Lord and taking care of those who are gradually making their elevation to understanding who the Lord is in his absolute form. So we don't necessarily judge a book by its cover, but we use our intelligence, we recognize that someone's greatness is not judged by the external symptoms. That some person once said to me after a Bhagavatam class many years ago when I was still a brahmacharini, oh, but you are a Shudra, I cannot hear Bhagavatam from you. And I was like, oh, well, I'm just repeating. I'm just repeating. Fine, I'm a Shudra based on where I was born, but I'm repeating and I'm following Krishna's instructions, so you can take it or leave it. Oh, one time we were having prasadam upstairs, and one person came and said, oh, no, I know these things, I'm from India, you don't know. And I was like, well, I do know that you need to wash your mouth and hands before you come back and serve. Like, no, I know these things, you don't know these things, I'm from India. Like, well, we have a standard too here, you know, we're all trained. So the point I'm trying to make is it doesn't matter what your external appearance is when trying to approach the Lord. The Lord does not care for what your past was or what you look like, but you're trying to hear his message. And the Prachetas could recognize that Lord Shiva was speaking the absolute truth, so they listened. Never mind who was appearing with him, never mind how he is decorated. Simultaneously, Lord Shiva is a very beautiful personality. So even though he's covered in ash and skulls, he's a very beautiful personality. So when we make an attempt to come towards Krishna, the Lord will send us help, whether it's in terms of more association, and he will reveal as we serve the Lord, as we hear about the Lord, we will be able to understand our position in relationship to him as well. So we already mentioned how the Lord Shiva, he instructed them based on the fact that they were descendants of a very dear devotee. And he could see that they were searching. They wanted to perform a search and sacrifice so they could perform their service nicely and be beneficial. So it's explained that after many, many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto Krishna. Knowing Krishna to be the cause of all causes and all that is. So Lord Shiva, not only could he recognize they're coming from a line of a devotee family, they are searching. It's been lifetime after lifetime, they are searching and they are sincere and they are surrendered souls. Therefore, I will give some knowledge about Krishna. And that is how probably some of us ended up here. All of us have been wandering in the material existence. So it said in the 7th chapter, Bahunam Dhammanam Ante Gyanavam Mam Prapadyate Vasudeva Sambham Iti Sa Mahatma Sudulabha. Well, we have been wandering and wandering, birth after birth, death after death, lost from our connection. And somehow, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we've come into contact with a bona fide source of giving us Krishna. So these 10 sons were sincere in their quest. They were sincere in following the orders of their father, who instructed them to perform austerities. And they were surrendered. So in the earlier texts, and later on we will hear Prabhupada in the purport explain how the sons of the king, they took the instruction of the father so seriously, without doubt, and they were surrendered souls. So if we look at Prabhupada's different parts, Prabhupada explains the six outlines or steps, the six stages of surrender: accepting things and rejecting things for discharging devotional service. Those are the first two. Followed by always believing in the Lord's protection, feeling exclusive dependence on the Lord, having no interest separate from the Lord, and always feeling meek and humble. These are the six stages of surrender. And in between, of course, you could spend an entire month talking about these six stages or levels of surrender, but we can see in our life how much we are surrendered or not, and that is to not come down on ourselves like rocks or criticize ourselves, but to see, do I accept things that are favorable? Do I reject things that are unfavorable? Well, we've done a lot so far. We have the principles that Prabhupada has given us to help us have a clear, good consciousness so that we can hear and chant more. We have the chanting, which is something that is very favorable in reigniting our relationship with Krishna. Without chanting, really, quite frankly, and when I say chanting, I'm talking about japa, without our japa, it is very, very difficult to stay motivated in Krishna consciousness, to have long-lasting staying power, because that is where our energy comes from. That is where our potency will come from, our japa, and how attentive we are. So if we're not chanting japa, we might mechanically perform service and stuff, but the potency won't be as great as it could be. Japa is like fuel. So if we accept all these items like japa and seeing the deities and hearing the Bhagavatam and actively serving Krishna, then it's very easy for us to see what's there to accept, what's there to reject. And gradually over time we'll develop exclusive dependence on the Lord. Not that, no, my bank account is what I depend on. My body is what I depend on. Other people is what I depend on. All these things will change with time. Right? Everything has a beginning and an end in the material scheme of things, but our relationship with Krishna is not whimsical when it comes to relationships. If he says he's there to stay, he's there. Whereas money is chanchala, Lakshmi is chanchala. Like, it's very flickery. It's here today, gone tomorrow. We see what happens if there's an economic bust. People run to the bank and, you know, let me take out all my money because I get broke, because that is our exclusive shelter. If I have money, all is good. That is why Vedically, you know, if you look at the verses before, although sometimes it is made fun of for the wrong reasons, when people get married, the bride is given so much gold, so many jewels, right? Not that she could every day just walk like a bedazzled human being, but if need be for the economic maintenance and sustenance, they can use their gold. It is very valuable. they can maintain themselves. If anything were to happen, same thing in where I come from, right? You have gold, that is wealth. Paper money is not really wealth, because it can just go anytime. But if you have gold, if you have land, if you have animals, that is wealth. So all these things were given in a functioning human society with different ashrams to protect the citizens so that they do not live in anxiety. That is why even when the kings perform sacrifices, they will give in charity. And what they gave in charity, it wasn't, oh, you get a car, you get a DVD, you get a TV, you get this. These are all worthless at the end of the day. Someone will come and, you know, what's a TV set? A car, it depreciates from the time you start driving it. But if you get given a car, which keeps giving and giving, if you have land, you keep on planting your own food, there's a barter system, society is safe, you help each other out, everyone is happy and stable and healthy. It is very easy to sit down and discuss higher subject matters. But if you're always thinking, I need to go out there and work and get more and more and more, because what if something happens? We're living out of fear. And when you live out of fear, it is very difficult to try and have exclusive faith in a being that you have not seen. When you say to people, just worship Krishna, surrender to Krishna, is he going to help me out financially because I don't have a job? And right, you get hit with all these material situations that stop people on the tracks sometimes. But if you had a healthy human civilization where the kings made sure that the citizens were happy materially and spiritually, no one would worry or be anxious or live in fear. Right? They would be happily sitting every evening, hearing, listening to Mahabharata, reading, enacting Mahabharata. I'm sure maybe our great-great-grandparents, that's what they used to do before television and all these things. I remember even as a kid, when I visited our grandmother, you know, we'd be in the village just sitting and listening to stories. Right, just happy, listening to Bible stories. Well, that was raised Christian. Not being in so much anxiety. They're not in so much anxiety. We're all home hearing together, performing plays, enacting the birth of Jesus. For me, that was the best thing. Being in plays and enacting stories of the Bible. So when the society was arranged nicely, people can actually take shelter of the Supreme Lord. They can sit and try to hear. But if everyone is up in arms in fear and anxiety, the only thing that they want to get rid of is their fear and anxiety. Let me go and make more so that me and my family are safe. But if we approach the Lord and we are set up in a society where the kings and the leaders give us a platform and an environment to be Krishna conscious in, it will be easier for us to reject unfavorable things. It will be easier for us to accept favorable things. It will be easier for us to take exclusive shelter, to have no separate interest, and to offer ourselves as meek and humble servants. It will be a natural inclination because we are ultimately part and parcel of Krishna. When we start hearing about him, we want to serve, and as we serve, we want to hear more and more about Krishna. So it is necessary for us to try to approach bona fide spiritual teachers, and we're so fortunate we are in a bona fide parampara. We have bona fide literatures here that guide us in our life. And our intelligence will keep getting sharper and sharper, and we'll be able to worship and execute devotional service and act on the instructions of the spiritual master. And if we do this, this is the greatest sacrifice. This is our sacrifice in the age of Kali. We'll be sharing Krishna with others. So the secret to success, as mentioned in this purport, is to take the words of the spiritual master seriously and try to execute them. That is the secret of success. I will stop there and ask if there are any comments or questions. Hare Krishna, Hare Griva.
And you said that the material things
are
worthless.
We have said that material things are worthless. I was given an example, right? He was saying material things are worthless. Why do people get attached to them? It's a very good question. So we get attached to material things because, and it's a variety of material things. We get attached to these material things because they are deceptive, which means they appear to be what they're not. So they look like they're going to make us happy all the time. Like you have your favorite Game Boy or your favorite game or your favorite phone. It comes that you think, the goal of my life right now is acquiring this Game Boy. It's going to make me so happy. Or this car is going to make me feel like a great man or a great woman, whatever it is. And then you get it, and it's not as exciting. But the way it's being presented to us makes us think it's going to make us extremely happy. So it is, that's why the word I use, it is very deceptive. Just like you might think something is a rope, but it's a snake. So it looks like it's going to make us happy, but it doesn't. And we get attached because the nature of the soul is to seek out pleasure. We think that this thing is going to give me pleasure. So we get attached to it, and when it doesn't give us pleasure, we look for something else to replace and think that that other thing is going to give us pleasure. And when that doesn't give us pleasure, we look for something else to give us pleasure. So on and on, the chase for pleasure continues. And we don't quite realize that material things have a fleeting moment of pleasure. It'll give us pleasure for a little bit, but then no more pleasure. So we look for something else and something else and something else. So it keeps going on, and we keep chasing. So if you ever look, there's pictures of a hamster. A hamster is like a little rat. Sometimes children keep them as pets. I'm not giving out any ideas. So you have a little hamster, and it lives in a little cage, and it has a little wheel, and it just keeps running. It thinks it's going to jump out and chase something. It just keeps running. So that's the thing. When we chase material pleasure, we're like that hamster, we're just running. We're not getting off that wheel, we're not getting that little promised fruit or whatever. We can smell it, we can taste it, it's just, we just keep running, and nothing is going to come out of material pleasure. That's why people chase it, because we're chasing pleasure, but material things don't give everlasting pleasure. Thank you for your question, Hare Griva. Yeah, the kids are active today. Yes, Krishna.
If you use things in the service of Krishna, do those worthless things have some worth?
Mm-hmm. Very beautiful questions. If we use material things for Krishna's pleasure, do those things then have worth? Yes. Because guess what? This body is material, but I'm using it for Krishna's pleasure. So I take care of it, and this body is helping me become Krishna conscious, is helping the soul. I use my car to drive from Werribee, so I make sure that I don't get into an accident, I do not dent it, I pay my registration, I do all these things so that I can come to the temple. So we can use material things separately from Krishna, or we can use them in Krishna's service. And when we use things separately, they don't give any profound value. Just like these 10 sons, they were going to go and perform austerities without thinking about Krishna. But then Lord Shiva says, no, you do the same thing, but you also add these prayers about Krishna, and your sacrifices will become worthy. So we can use all these things in Krishna's service. And there's nothing wrong with it because we're here sitting glorifying Krishna. When it gets more complicated, that's why we always take guidance of a spiritual master. It could be Shiksha Guru or Diksha Guru. It could be something dealing with, should I move here? I have a job offer there. So many things could be changing. We always take guidance to make the right decision. Thanks for your question. Oh yeah, okay. Sylvia, you're next. Okay, very good question. So in order to, I'll repeat it, I was saying that I gave the example that it doesn't matter how we look. We could be of different races, different color of skin. It doesn't really matter. We can engage in Krishna consciousness. Now to take it further, he said it's important that when we preach to people, we have to use nice language. We have to present ourselves nicely. And that is a fact. Just because we're Krishna conscious or we use the tagline simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated, or simple living, high thinking. It doesn't mean we should look disheveled. It doesn't mean we have to look poor or unkept to show that we are so austere and renounced. That's not what it means. Renounced in our actions and austere in our activities and in our sense control, yes. But we should present ourselves nicely so that the person who naturally would not want to hear about Krishna, you can approach that person and talk to them. So yes, you have to look presentable, just like Srila Prabhupada. If you go at home, you look at different books in the Lilamrita, or if you go on the computer with your mom, you look at all the pictures of Srila Prabhupada. He was always perfectly dressed. Very tidy, very neat. Even when he spoke so eloquently, so nicely, so respectfully, even to people who did not accept Krishna as the Supreme God. And as when we do outreach, when you share Krishna using book distribution or anything, you want to leave people with a good impression, even if they don't take a book. So you want to make them like you. So you have to speak nicely. When people look at you these days, they size you up. You know what that means? Like they look at, okay, what shoes are you wearing? Are you okay? They look at you, they judge you. Because that's what they're buying. It's like we're salespeople. You're presenting Krishna. Sometimes when I used to distribute books, I don't think people would hear what I'm saying. They would just be looking at me, okay, she's confident, she's talking, she knows what she's talking about, she's dressed okay, she's clean, she's speaking good English, okay, yeah, sure, I'll take it. But sometimes it's like mysticism. You go send, and I remember once I went out on book distribution with Bhakti Lata, and we were on some street somewhere for some marathon, and I was talking to some lady, you know, and got three books, and Bhakti Lata came up to me, she's like, that lady was so fixed on your face, what were you saying? I'm like, I don't know. But some, they just look at you, yes, yeah. And the trick, get them to say yes 3-4 times, take the book, yes. Right? But you present Krishna nicely, you look presentable, you're respectful with your words, and that is important in spreading Krishna consciousness, that is true. So when I say it's not important how you look, I meant more that you don't exclude people because they come from a different country. You don't exclude people because maybe they have a tattoo or they have a different hairstyle. It doesn't matter. All these things, they're not that important. What's important is that we try to give an aspect of Krishna to them. Give them prasadam, give them a book, give them a holy name, give them something. So in the next time they meet a devotee, they'll get something else. If we leave a good impression, they'll get something else. Another good impression, they'll get something else. And the chain continues. And that is how they will take up the process. But I used to steal pakoras from a classmate when I was 13 years old. She was a devotee. I didn't know. I used to see the father talking to himself. That's what we used to call it. We're like, your dad talks to you, to himself. What's up with that? Right? So I met her and her father. They would bring prasadam. And later on in high school, I had devotee teachers. And then after high school, I had a devotee housemate. And then eventually I ended up in a temple. So you see, Krishna keeps giving you. And I was receptive because they had always been nice towards me. So the same family, my sister was in class with the sibling. My mother ran the school where the parents taught. So like that, it continues. So we leave a good impression. People will take up Krishna consciousness and listen. So yes, use nice words. Present yourself nicely. We do that for everything. If you go to a bank, if you're applying for a job, you're getting a loan, an interview, you come prepared. We're giving Krishna consciousness, we should also be nicely dressed. Because we're giving the highest thing. I'll ask Priya. Of who?
Dhruva Maharaj.
Oh, okay.
In the sense that, I was listening to a lecture where it said that because he was so determined to get Krishna and he went to the forest, so the Lord knew that he was, could see he was determined, so he sent the spiritual master Maharaj to instruct him and then he got Krishna. So in this incident also, there were serious, and Ani Rupa was mentioning that they were very serious in religiosity and devotional service, so when they went out, they
Yeah, and it's very interesting that that happened with Dhruva Maharaj, who's coming in the same line. And later on we'll see how Narada Muni spots that King Pachinhabare is a bit too attracted to fruitive sacrifices. So he steers him in the right direction because of the affection he has for Dhruva Maharaj. So because of the good deeds of a great devotee, so many other devotees later on get benefit because of the affection the devotees have for each other. And now we're seeing these the prachetas, they're so serious about the instruction they got from their father that the Lord is sending guidance towards them because he sees the sincerity. And although this is in Satya Yuga, it doesn't really matter because the principle is still the same. When the Lord sees a sincerity, when the Lord sees that there's a hunger, the Lord will send help for us to become attracted to Him. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Yes, okay, 1, 2, 3. Yes, Dhruva Prabhu.
We talked about dressing nicely for people.
Yes. I wouldn't be sitting down giving a class in jeans and a tank top, right? But if I go to the uni or if I'm taking someone out that's interested in Krishna consciousness, I might wear some runners, a jumpsuit or whatever. Because we've been doing this for so long, sometimes we forget how different we look. And although we just think, oh, it's just a sari, it's just tilak. For some people, that is very intimidating. For some people, that is very religious, right? To be seen with someone dressed like that. So sometimes it's it even breaks the barrier when they see, oh, you wear jeans too? Oh, you go hiking too? So that already cuts down a misunderstanding. It already makes them more susceptible to hearing from you, because you're not coming from this place that they can't reach. Right? Some people would say, you know, are you guys allowed to like exercise? And these are legitimate questions people used to ask me. Can you guys exercise? Because we don't see you in anything else but saris. They can't relate to this. So we have to try to come to a level where they can relate. So yes, according to the place you're going to, you dress appropriately. If I go to some friends who want to hear about my lifestyle, I'll wear appropriate attire. If I go to India, or if I go to places and I'm doing outreach to an audience who come from the subcontinent of India and Asia, I will wear this because this opens more dialogue. Oh, wow, you weren't born in India, but you wear a sari so nicely. Oh, you worship Krishna, you're wearing tilak. How do you do this? We're born in India. We don't know how to do any of this. So already, depending on where you are, you dress appropriately. Thank you. Okay, who was first? Hayagriva. Like Prabhuji just said, Lord Shiva's position is that he deals with personalities that are very, we could say in the social norm, they're very, what's the English word? They're outcasts. Like he deals with ghosts, ghostly creatures. He deals with, you know, people who have committed suicide, etc. So they're already a little bit weird or strange. So Lord Shiva appeases those personalities. He doesn't dress himself extravagantly so that they feel comfortable, because he's their caretaker. So it's not that if we went out covered in ashes, with skulls around, we might get pulled over by the police for public indecency, or to see if we're okay. Because it looks out of order. In Satyayuga, people know who Lord Shiva is. In different places, they understand the position of Lord Shiva and his appearance. And like I said, he may have smeared all these things on himself, but he's still a very beautiful personality. So it's not like, oh, he's ashy and he has these people. Oh, he must be an ugly figure. He's a very beautiful personality because he's always talking about Krishna. So what we get instructed to do, you know, I always think close to home. I look at Srila Prabhupada. I look at the traveling preachers around ISKCON and how they dress themselves and how they are appropriate according to time and place. Even some regions, they do not go with religious attire for obvious reasons. They wear normal clothes. But when they go other places, they will be in their sannyas dress. Some countries, they have to go in normal clothes, like China. Okay, the last two before I get in trouble. I'm being fired by children today. Yes, Krishna?
Are you telling that the people get the green light, they want a car, and when they get the car, they say that they are not satisfied by it? How to control the greed?
How do we control greed is the question. Well, we transform what we're greedy towards. Greed will always be there, but what are we greedy for? We can see with how devotees are greedy to hear and chant, and how they're greedy for prasadam, right? So we want to taste something that is satisfying. So it's a matter of shifting the consciousness and shifting the taste. If we change the taste for pleasure, then that solves the problem. That's why when reaching out to people, we try to find ways and means to attract them in their particular situation. Some people, philosophy is just not it for them. They can't, it just doesn't register. They like kirtan. So you try to engage them in that, and their taste for spiritual vibration, for spiritual food, it will change. And as that taste changes, their greed will also change. I mean, all of us were like that at some point. I don't know about you. I wasn't born into a devotee family. I was greedy for other things. But then I started tasting simultaneously. I was tasting the process of bhakti, tasting other things. And the more I tasted bhakti, my greed changed. And then I transformed an entire lifestyle. So you give them aspects of Krishna based on what they're attracted to. Some people like food, some people like chanting, some people like meditation. You can try to tailor-make all these things to attract their senses. Because it's all about senses. They're greedy to hear something, to taste something, to intellectualize about something. This is all provided in the Bhakti Yoga tradition. So you find what they like, you try to give it to them, and that will transform their consciousness and their greed will change. There's nothing wrong with getting a car. I'm just putting it out there. It was just an example. We can all get cars, but we use it in Krishna service. It doesn't have to be a bummed out car. You can get yourself a nice car. You can get a Tesla if you like. You can get a BMW, whatever, as long as that does not interfere with our relationship with Krishna. Very last question. No, when you're that, you don't have to wear Chinese dress because most of them don't. But most of them, because it's most of them, they do not allow religion into their country. So you go dressed like that.